Welcome to So Good We Named It, the first Golden Girls and Golden Palettes podcast, and the first, to my knowledge, Golden Girls or Golden Palettes podcast with Black hosts. I'm Barrett.
And I'm Kay.
You know, I should really just use the same one every time. Because I just say it over. Well, on the last episode, a little fun fact insider. I used our intro from Matt Browning's episode for the one for H. Allen because we sounded like robots in our intro. And you would never know. Seamless technology. So we have a very special guest today, an image consultant, if you will, from Twitter. Would you like to introduce yourself? Tell the people who you are, where they can find you.
Yes. Hi, everybody. I'm Ben. I'm super happy to be here. I have been a fan of Golden Girls since I can't remember. I swear, like, I was raised by the show. I couldn't be happier to be here. I'm actually, like, I feel like on the younger end of the spectrum of the fan base, but I, you know, convert everybody my age if I can. I have, my boyfriend is 21 and I make him watch it every day. So I'm super happy to be here. This is my first time ever doing a podcast like this one. So I'm ready to jump right in.
Well, welcome aboard. And I, too, have gotten my husband into Golden Girls. And my previous relationship got him into it. And I think he still has my season 2 DVD box set, which is why I had to rebuy it. You can definitely return that, Mark. Thanks.
Are you mad? Trigger warning.
I'm just saying. Come on, that Mark. Was mine.
Okay. Mark, please send him back the season 2 DVD collection. My God.
Thank you. But we are going to talk about some sad stuff on a very special episode of So Good We Named It. I'm just glad I'm here for it, to do it, because I didn't go to bed till like 4, forgetting that we were going to record today. And then I just shot up in bed, and I was like, wait, I got to record. And then I checked. I was like, maybe it's not tomorrow. And I looked, and it was. I was like, damn.
It is. We're here.
But I took my my pill, so I should be alert. I have idiopathic hypersomnia. And
oh my God.
I have to take a pill to keep me alert. So I was like, let me take it right now. Hopefully I'm not going to be taking it for 30 years like Rose. But I'm alert. I'm here. I'm ready to go. I've got my morning voice, so I sound very sensual. But you specifically wanted to talk about sad Golden Girls episodes.
I didn't want to bring everybody down, but I do want to say, like, I was just telling my boyfriend, because I was watching some of the moments to get myself prepared. They're always the best episodes for me. Like, and I love all the episodes. And it's not even because they're sad, because some of those sad episodes are also the funniest episodes. It's really like, I don't know, there's a lot of special moments. So I figured,
yeah, they do.
You know, why not bring them up?
They do balance it. It's like, okay, this is super sad, so let's have this absurd B story to make up for. But I got my tissues right here, even though not really a crier. I know people.
I'm also not a crier.
People will say, I've watched this episode and I cry every time. I've never cried watching it. But, you know, today might be the day. I'm just going to let it out. So first on the list of sad episodes, I would say when I think of sad episodes, it's, of course, you want to think of when someone dies. So I think Phil dying is probably the saddest because it's one of the girls' kids.
My baby's gone.
Right. That was that was rough, you know. Sophia's so tough, but she couldn't take it. I mean, understandably, this is her child. I don't know why they felt the need to kill him, especially since we never saw him anyway. Any thoughts on why Phil had to get chopped?
Keep it spicy, you know what I mean? They had to put some drama in there or something.
But damn, why Phil? Should kill Stan.
You can't kill Stan. That's not appropriate.
Well, spoiler alert, in Golden Palace, you know, they don't stick with that rule of thought. But it was weird because, number one, why is the funeral in Miami? Where are all of his kids? And I don't know. I just feel like, of all people, like, who was in the writing room, like, you know what? Let's just murder Phil Petrillo. To hell with him. I mean, I know you said keep it spicy, but geez. Did you cry at this, Ben?
Oh, yeah. And it's always the very last line. You know, I'm not crying throughout the episode, but there's something about the demeanor change in Sophia when she's speaking to Angela, and Angela, you know, lets that like 20-year pain of hating her mother-in-law, mm-hmm. she drops it, and she's the one thing we have in common is we both love who Phil was, and that's when the tears fly. Even you know, you cry with Sophia, you know, it's just and I'll be honest, growing up like as a gay young person, a lot of gay people, like, you know, we all love the Golden Girls, but there's something really cathartic about that moment, because I think we all felt growing up, you know, just a little bit of a dissonance with our parents, because they're not going to understand that part of us so easily, and especially not back in like the 80s, 90s, you know. So it was just a really cathartic moment for, you know, myself at least.
Sophia was angry. She was mad the whole episode until like the last few minutes when it finally sunk in and she was like, my baby is gone. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, with him being, he may or may not have been queer, was not said for sure, but he was a cross-dresser and, mm-hmm. you know, she clearly had an issue with that. So I can see the connection of, you know, gay people feeling a certain type of way, because, you know, she never fully accepted it, but now she never can, because now he's dead. And I'm sure she probably felt bad about all the things she might have said about him or thought about him, you know, because it was so abrupt. It's not like she could prepare. Mm-hmm. Didn't he die at some like plus size women's store trying on outfits? So, you know, all the feelings you've had, you know, over the course of his life as his mother all are rushing back in that moment. And of course, you know, you'll get mad at people or feel some type of way because you think, oh, we'll fix it later, we'll get to it later. And she didn't get that chance. And with it being, you know, your child, that's even worse, because you feel like, well, what did I do, you know, to, I think she says that, you know, what did I do to make him like this? Because you blame yourself.
I think her anger through the episode, she'll point it at anybody, but she's angry at herself. And in the moment when Angela says, what he was, Sophia, was a good man, is Angela saying, like, you don't need to be mad at yourself. And that's when that anger drops, and she mourns. And it's a strong moment. Throughout the entire show, it's a very strong moment.
Yeah, it's interesting, specifically for that character, because she's the least emotional out of all of them. And she had to deal with the most emotional thing. Because if, you know, one of Rose's kids died or something, you know, that would just be, you know, totally a different storyline.
Yeah.
But Sophia's the tough one, and I, you know, can identify with her. I'm not the most emotional, and I feel like, no, I got to keep a, you know, a strong face or whatever, like she does, because can't let people see me sweat. But then she finally just gives in, and it's one of the rare times we even see her cry, because the other girls, again, you know, cry for various things. Dorothy cries, you know, I feel like over nothing. I think there was a time when she's like, Rose is bothering me, and started crying. Sophia, the only other time I think she cries was when Dorothy got married. So it's like she only shows that emotion when her kids are in the mix. And I feel like, I think that is the only other time. Because I know in the finale, I think it was the finale when she was like, oh, guess it wasn't as touching as I thought. No, it wasn't the finale. I don't know what episode, but she was like, oh, am I crying? She's like, oh, I guess it wasn't that touching. It was the finale? Okay. I'm glad you know, as an expert.
Do you being shady?
No, I'm saying, I'm glad he knows as an expert.
Because I nodded my head.
Oh, did you?
No.
I did. Wow.
I thought you were whacked out on blood pressure medicine. But I feel like the second most... I guess devastating episode is when Big Daddy dies, because you know, it's losing a kid and then losing a parent. You know, those are supposed to be, you know, two of the bigger things in your life. And for me, what made it the most sad is that Blanche was being Blanche, and, you know, made it about her and didn't even really get a proper goodbye.
Right.
But that's about, that's Blanche's character. I feel like Blanche had a habit of running away from life, like, true, you know, simple fixes. And, you know, even when she, you know, was dating a blind man, you know, like the little stress that was, she had a fight or flight and always chose flight. It was always mm-hmm. like, and, you know, that's just her character. I felt like exactly the way Big Daddy died is exactly the way I would have predicted Blanche to handle it. So she wanted to have this like drama with Virginia, and she wanted to worry about the ball or the citrus festival or something. And it's so wild because when Big Daddy was there, like, Blanche was always over the moon. Like, she loved the man. Like, so it was just, it was sad. But,
you know. Yeah, she adored him.
I feel like it wasn't really about Virginia. She wanted a reason to not go. So it's like, mm-hmm. oh, the first thing that happens, oh, you don't have to worry about me, honey, because as long as you're there, I'm not going to be the blah, blah, blah.
Because she didn't want to face it.
She just wanted any reason to not go, basically. Mm-hmm. And where was Clayton and Charmaine and the fourth one that right. we meet later on? But I'm really surprised they even, number one, brought a sibling back, because the show is so good about just erasing people during special occasions. But it's also the mm-hmm. same actress all those years later. So that was kind of exciting to see her again. Good to see she, you know, got the kidney and it worked out okay. But I feel like, I know Blanche is super, you know, self-centered and selfish and things like that. But mm-hmm. damn, to miss your father's funeral, that's kind of a new low. And, you know, what was the point of even going down there? Just for that?
But if that's the type of person you are, just because there's a life-changing event, that doesn't change the type of person that you are. It just magnifies it.
So yeah. Maybe she's a narcissist, a covert narcissist.
Start diagnosing people.
I mean, I just feel like, you know, you got to be pretty narcissistic to pull some shit like that. Because I'm sure everybody at the funeral, oh, where's Blanche? Where's Blanche? So now we're all talking about you at your father's funeral.
Mm-hmm. And like unless you said, she just couldn't close. Take. She just couldn't take.
I don't know. It's not like she was at home. I think it
all, she has this whole narcissistic like plot line up until she has that private moment with the casket. I think that's when she accepts what she did and accepts her mistake and realizes what she lost because of it. And that's what she says, if I could give up all of that, I would. And that's just one of those that like nuance and character is actually what makes the show so great, because it's not it would not have been interesting for Blanche's character development for her to, you know, just have graciously accepted his, you know, right. debt. That really wasn't
true to her. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would have liked to see her go to the funeral and then maybe cause a scene at the funeral. Maybe that's not any better.
That's so dramatic.
But she essentially did, because she didn't go. And that in and of itself is a scene, because if you went all the way to Georgia, but you're not going to go to the ceremony, like, what does that say? So she did cause a scene.
I think it would have brought some levity to it. When my aunt passed, the city that my parents are from, there was a, I don't know if he was a drag queen or what, but there was a guy who would dress in women's clothing and, you know, wear wigs and makeup, things like that. And this was, you know, years and years ago. My mother's almost 70. So, you know, a little progressive in a way. He would lead parades and stuff like that. But anyway, they figured that he was going to try to go because he did know my aunt. And they had people, like, at the door, like, don't let him in because he likes to make a scene, blah, blah, blah. Make sure he doesn't get in here. So I'm sitting in the, I guess, the pulpit because I had to speak or something. And somehow he got in anyway.
And did he make a scene?
And I could see him, and the few people up there could see, but the people in the crowd, audience, whatever you want to call it, couldn't see him until it was too late. So he, like, tips through, as my cousin described it, like he was wearing air pumps. and he just tips down the aisle. He was in drag. I don't remember what he had on. And he, like, dramatically tapped the casket and then tipped back out of the door. And I feel like, yeah, that was extremely awkward, but it kind of brought, you know, some of the tension down, because it's like, okay, this most ridiculous thing ever just happened in the middle of a funeral. So maybe that could have helped.
But was that ridiculous?
Not for him, but just in general, yes. To have somebody, you know, not just in general, that'd be weird for that to happen, but he just happened to be in drag. This is the South, you know, where that's kind of frowned upon. And he busts into the funeral and taps the casket and then tips out. So that was a little odd. I'd never seen that at a funeral, but it brought the mood, you know, a little lighter. So I feel like something like that, you know, something dramatic that could have happened where Blanche could be like, oh, I was being so silly, and then hugs Virginia, whatever. But no, you just missed the whole damn thing to look at pictures of you as a fat kid.
Oh my God.
And why didn't the other girls go with her? Like, I mean, I guess they did offer, and she's like, oh, I'm going to fly right back up here and blah, 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 because I guess she thought he was still alive at that point. I don't know at what point she knew, because when I first saw the episode, I'm like, well, maybe he's not dead. Maybe it is just a trick. But then she's crying about the ketchup on her lima beans, about how he made everything seem so damn special. So I'm like, okay, maybe he is dead. So I would think that they would go with her, but I guess they wanted a B story for some reason. She needed a B, but I felt like, you know, that would have been nice. So they could have just had the funeral in Miami. Like, everything else just happens to, you know, take place in Miami. But it does kind of, I don't know. She says she's the new Blanche Devereaux or whatever and breaks the plate. I don't know if I really noticed that much of a change after that. Do you?
Not really. It just sounded like the right thing to say at the time, you know, with everything that was going on. Because she was the same.
Yeah. I feel like
she didn't cherish any moments. She still, you know, made it what it, she's just who she is. And you can't take that away from her.
She has a good heart.
The only thing was Charmaine's book and Clayton bringing Roger. Are those after Big Daddy's funeral?
I know that the book was after, because she said, you know, you have Big Daddy's pocket watch. You took it after the funeral. Yeah. When Clayton brought Doug, I think, I don't know. I think that was after Big Daddy
died. I feel like that was after, too.
Because otherwise it would have come up of, oh, what would Big Daddy say? So everybody just started living out loud, doing the most once Big Daddy died, because they, you know, were free from oppression.
But I think, as a caveat to that, with like the whole coming out thing, I just think that parents especially should be more accepting of their children if however they decide to live their lives. Because like, what does this one thing have to do with the whole entire person, right? Like, I would rather my son be gay than be a murderer. Like, that's jump. Not the thing. I'm just saying, because that, you know, people make it that dramatic. Like, oh my God, they say they like this, or they say, okay, would you rather them be a murderer? Would you rather them be a drug? Like, what's to it? Like, I just don't understand. So I think back then when this episode came out, that like going back to the Phil one, when Phil passed, that they were trying to be more, not be more inclusive, but like shed a light on what, how much of your life you miss, or how much of your kid's life you miss from being closed-minded. So I think that's what that whole episode was about.
Perhaps. Like, imagine how Mrs. Dahmer feels. He was gay and a murderer and doing drugs. God. So
Why are you
just pulling
this?
It all together for our true crime fans. But oddly enough, spoiler, we'll get to it eventually. We haven't done any Golden Palace in a minute, but when we finally meet Skippy, Blanche is convinced that he's gay, and she's trying to get him to come out of the closet like it's not a big deal. So I'm like, oh, so you don't care if he's gay, but if Clayton's gay, the world ends. Maybe she evolved. That is possible.
Yeah, maybe she evolved.
But I feel like, you know, it's different.
I think she did. I think she did, because I'm thinking about it. When Clayton first came out to her, it was like a take that back. Like, I didn't hear what you just said. Like, it was like a complete rejection. And then when Roger's in the mix, it's like she's hiding her discomfort. She's embarrassed of her own discomfort. And when Clayton overhears her and he's like, is that really how you feel, Blanche? She was embarrassed. So like, that progression isn't that she all of a sudden wasn't closed-minded. It was that she realized that it's wrong to be closed-minded. It's not that she's not. She just now knows that that's not okay, and even in the episode with Roger and the episode with Charmaine, like, she's still the old Blanche, but there are these moments where she's like, my sister was the nicest she's ever been, or like when Clayton's like, Roger loves me for who I am, not what he wants me to be. Blanche isn't all of a sudden a totally different person as much as she's more able to learn the lessons. At first she was rock hard, and then it's like Big Daddy's death, I think, broke her down a little bit. And it kind of sucks that it didn't really have that positive ending with Virginia. Like in the funeral episode, it's just still kind of negative, but at least with her other siblings, she learned a little something.
Was that the last note that they left off on?
Yeah, we never hear from her again or see her.
Right, that's what I'm saying. That's like the last note they left off on.
And by Roger, do you mean Doug?
Doug, where am I pulling Roger out of?
I think you got Martha Ray and Madge mixed up again. Roger is Dorothy's grandson, assumed to be grandson, Lamar and or Roger Robbie. But yeah, I think it's very similar with Becky that, okay, first you announce this thing and I can't deal with it because everybody's going to know. Then I'm like, okay, it's fine. But then when she comes back with wanting to, you know, do it in Miami, then it's a big deal because, oh, everybody's going to know. And same thing with Clayton. Oh, well, now everybody in Atlanta's going to know.
Everybody in Atlanta. So right.
So it's not like she's from a small town, but it's like the same thing. Like, I'm okay with it as long as nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
And that's clearly a recurring theme for her. And I think that in the end, you know, again, she's making it about her. Did, you know, Charmaine and Virginia feel the same way? Probably not. But everything goes back to her. Everything circles back to her, even if it's not about her. And again, narcissistic.
I was just going to say that. It sounds very narcissistic.
You know, she does have her moments, but it always has a little, you know, bit of Blanche. Like, oh, I'd love to help with these mammals with blowholes, but, you know, I'm sick of licking envelopes. Or I'll go door to door and get these signatures, but, you know, I'm only going to do one at a time because I want to have sex with them or whatever. So it's never fully, you know, for the right reasons, except for when she gives Lillian her breast money, I think. Her breast implant money. I think that's the only time where she's completely, you know.
Selfless.
Right. Don't get used to it. And that, you know, in itself is a sad episode, especially with Betty White passing and the last scene, you know, Rose says, what's going to happen is only one of us left. That was, you know, one of the more sad moments, I think more so now because they're all dead. But just thinking about how many people in that situation are struggling because of the healthcare system for the elderly. So it makes you think about that in a real world terms, not just in the show, which makes it sad on a whole other level.
Because it's real.
Yeah. And on Enough Wicker, they recently did the Lillian episode, and, you know, since they're the scholarly podcast of the Golden Girls universe, they were, you know, going into how, you know, because of Reagan, I guess, so much funding has been cut and how this is such a real thing and how there aren't as many requirements now for nursing homes, which is why they're so terrible. And how in some countries, you know, the government takes care of that. So you know you'll be okay, but, you know, not here. So it is kind of scary to think, like, what's going to happen? There's not going to be Social Security when we're that age. There might not even be any nursing homes that aren't, you know, Shady Pines-esque. Right. So it's like, well, you know, what is going to happen? So hopefully I'll just be rich from this podcast and I'd have to worry about it.
Okay. My kids will take care of me. Hopefully the oldest one doesn't murder me, but that's another story for another day.
Well, just get the melon baller. So another sad episode that I do not watch, Brother, Can You Spare a Jacket, or That Jacket?
Oh, that one was sad as hell.
It's
the homelessness
sad
episode.
And boring because it's just all this focus
on
the shelter.
I don't like that one either,
now
that I think about it.
You should love it. You said you like the sad episodes. It doesn't get much sadder than that.
I didn't even think about that one. That one isn't even sad as much as it is, like, I don't know, depressing. You know how those are different.
Like there's
feel
not
like
a lot of jokes in there.
No, it's it'll bring you down. And some of the sad moments that I love lift me up. So the Brother, Can You Spare a Jacket one, like, first off, like, the whole Michael Jackson thing is goofy. Like, It was hard to take that seriously. Why is Michael Jackson just like the president? Why is everybody at their house? The Russian embassy, like
right? I've never been so to Miami, things. But everyone else has.
Right, and they all flew through 5161. I don't understand.
But I agree, that is definitely weird.
And also, I have this thing about the black gentleman who Rose was speaking to, in that I can't stand that he was always cast as like this, like down on his luck black man. Like,
yeah.
I don't blame him for that. I blame the like studio. Like, I hate that. Like when he's also the waiter in the restaurant and it's like, of course he's not spending time with his family because he's, you know, that's just his life. I'm like, no, like, I don't
And did he own the restaurant? He made it sound like he did, because if he did own it, just close and go home. But right. Maybe the restaurant closed and that's how he ended up being homeless, because there were no people in there besides the girls. But right. he definitely is playing characters that are, you know, a little slavish in their delivery.
Yeah. Dramatic.
I mean,
slavish.
You know.
That's not appropriate.
It's not, but you know what I'm talking about. Like on Tom and Jerry, the character Mammy Two Shoes.
But he wasn't real. Like, you know, he wasn't like that. He owned the restaurant or whatever.
Well, more so in the Brother King Spare That Jacket, but you know, just, you know, slightly shucking and jiving a little bit, which is probably how they wrote it, and he was just, God. You know, doing it the way they want it.
Don't ever say shuck and jive.
But it was a little cringy, like, geez, you know, why does he have to, just because he's homeless, that doesn't mean, you know, that's how he would, you know, be, I guess, talk or, you know, whatever. And as someone who has worked very closely with the homeless for the past 5 years with my nonprofit Little Something, which is now over. But I would be out with the homeless, you know, in their environment, which, you know, that's depressing. In Chicago, we have Lower Wacker Drive, for those of you that don't know. And it's like a city underneath the city. And that's where a lot of homeless people live. And it is depressing, you know, to see that and think about, you know, what if that was me? What would I do? You know, everybody doesn't have family and stuff like that. Because if something happened to me, if I lost my job, I mean, first of all, I have 20 credit cards. So it's very unlikely I would be homeless anytime soon. But
until you max them bitches out.
Well, I would hope I could get a job in time. But even if something happened, you know, I have family. I have a husband. My husband has family. We have friends. I'll come live with you. You got lots of bedrooms. So it's really not a realistic thing that I could become homeless. But you know, you think about what if, you know, what if I didn't have these things. So, you know, seeing the show, that's actually a much better experience than I've had, because at least they're in a shelter. I'm seeing people on the streets, but it's still depressing, because it's like the Golden Girls is my escape. It's, you know, to have some kikis, not to think about the real world. And I know they wanted to have a very special episode, but damn, like, they really, you know, they gave you so many aspects, like the older woman who's like, who knew it costs money to get old, which again makes me think, oh, what's going to happen when I'm old?
Yep.
Hopefully Baratina is going to take care of me, or Baratisha will take care of me, and I won't have to worry about it. The twins that I'm going to
have. Oh, okay. All right.
But yeah, definitely depressing. Definitely like my, I don't know, between that and Empty Nest, I don't know which I hate the most. Because again, that's depressing too, because it ends with promise me you won't die, and then it just cuts to the credits. Like, what the hell?
No, we don't even watch that episode in this house.
It's just you know, some depressing ass shit, to be frank. I'm trying to think.
Very humbling.
Other depressing, or I know my, so I can do my favorite impression. I want you to be there when I kill myself. that is definitely
me and my boyfriend. We do that all the time.
Glad it's not just me. With hollandaise sauce. I don't know why she has a British accent. Is she from Britain? I don't know. Wasn't explained. Maybe she should go back to Britain if she's, you know, on her way out. But again, it just makes you think not only of your mortality, but what's going to happen when I get old. So much of this show is me worrying, what's going to happen when I'm old? Are we going to move in together, Kay, in Miami?
Let's do it.
House?
Hey. Hell yeah.
But
hell yeah.
It's not just depressing because, you know, she's alone, but she wanted to kill herself. I mean, yeah, damn.
Have the, that was a heavy one.
And again, Sophia cries. I forget. She does cry on that one. And she's like, I don't cry. And she's like, yes, you do. I can see your tears. And I can see yours. That means you still want to live, kid. Some kid. But her talking about she hears the silence, like, that's some sad shit.
Yeah.
I mean, damn, go to the senior center or something. And mingle. Go stay at Shady Pine. She looked like she had some money. She could buy it on time, as she likes to say.
And what, you know, I don't understand is why was the resolution, we'll talk every day, you're like a best friend, never to be heard from again.
Right. So I guess she killed herself because Sophia didn't fulfill her obligation. Same thing with Lillian. It's like she wants to be, you know, Captain Save an old lady and, oh, come live with me, or we'll do this, we'll do that. And then just abandon them. Like, ah, well, that's enough of that. And I get it. You know, I have not been suicidal, but I feel like, you know, at the end of the day, it's your life. And if you feel like you need to end it, you know, that's your business. Luckily, I'm not a grief counselor, but,
Jesus, Barrett,
but I can sympathize with that. You have no one around, you're by yourself. You have all these ailments, you know, they do have assisted suicide. However, she appeared to be in pretty fair health, overall, but, you know, that's a real thing. If you don't have any family, you don't have any kids or whatever, you know, your friends die. So who do you have? You're just by yourself. So that does seem pretty fucked up. So I can see why she would have felt like that. But I also feel like, is that problematic to be like, no, don't kill yourself, I'll save you. Like, you know, that's what somebody wants to do. I mean, I don't know. Is that
If you yourself are struggling with depression and or suicide, help is available. You can call the National Suicide Prevention Hotline at 800-273-8255. Well, you have,
and again, we're not advocating for people to unalive themselves. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that typically people will reach out and say, you know, I feel like this. She didn't really do that. She wasn't saying.
Not necessarily. Sometimes people don't reach out. Sometimes.
Right. And in those cases, by the time they reach out,
it's really at that time where they're just like, I have no will to live. I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. I guess I feel like, who are you to push your ideals on somebody, especially if you're not a professional? I get it. That's your friend, you know, speaking for Sophia. And you're not just going to let your friend go do that without saying something. But it's like you're putting your needs over theirs. If she's saying, I don't want to live, and you're like, no, you should live because I think you should. Easy for you to say. You, like she even tells her, you have a rich, full life. So how are you going to tell me when I'm here by myself? Like, I felt like that was a little selfish because it's not like Sophia is a professional and it's not like she could really fulfill that obligation realistically. So she's telling her to stay alive for a life that is not going to pan out the way she's claiming it will. Of, oh, we'll hang out. Oh, you can always talk to Rose. So she's pushing her, you know, a false dream, which I think would make her even more depressed when that didn't happen. And she'd be like, damn, I should have did it when I, you know, wanted to.
Not necessarily, because like I would say the same thing, that's not necessarily the same thing that Sophia was saying, but I would try to have the person look inside themselves to find a will to be here, because like what are you gonna do? That's just gonna be it? Like, no, that can't be possible. You know what I'm saying? There has to be something that you feel or that you can you know, find to find the will to want to be here. Like, you're like,
There's two things that Sophia says, and they're the only two things that she says that are completely like fair and right for her to say. And the first one was, we're not in this life for peace. And that's just a standalone statement that, you know, what she's going through is what we go through. Mm-hmm. She was not alone in going through that. And the second thing Sophia says is, when she's like, I'm not crying, she says, you're crying too. You know what that means? You don't know what you want to do. She says, I don't know what to do. That's what the lady says. And Sophia says, well, that's the point. You can't change your mind tomorrow.
Right.
And it wasn't that she wanted to kill herself. She wasn't sure she wanted to. And she ran with this idea that it was like the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, filet mignon. I bought a diamond ring, but like, she didn't know what she wanted to do. And she was really fooling herself into thinking she had it all worked out. And I think, I don't think Sophia necessarily had the right to be like, don't kill yourself. But I think she had the right to be like, you can't think about change your mind tomorrow.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, even if it was a random person, you know, if I was driving down the street and saw somebody, you know, about to jump off of a bridge, of course I'm going to be like, no, don't do it or whatever. But I guess my reasoning would not be about me, because Sophia's was kind of like, you know, about her and not, oh, well, you have, you know, your family to live for, your cat, whatever. I would make it about them and say, hey, don't you have somebody that cares about you? Not just be like, well, I have this life and I'll help you out. You can come over. You know, that was where my problem was, I guess, because I agree. I don't think she really wanted to kill herself, but I just feel like, you know, that was not the best response. But it also was kind of fucked up to loop Sophia into this. Like, that's a big burden to put on somebody. Oh, you know, be here and watch me die. Thanks. And I feel like, damn, you know, but maybe that's the closest person she had to her that could do that. So, you know, I get it, you know, feeling lonely, but I do feel like you should explore other avenues before you jump right to killing yourself. That seemed, you know, dramatic in this case, but, you know, at the end of the day, was I watching 911 with Angela Bassett. And if you're listening, Angela, come on the show sometime. They had a woman, actually it was the spinoff with Gina Torres, so you can come on the show. This woman had a do not resuscitate thing on, and they brought her back to life. And she was pissed off. She's like, I had, you know, do not resuscitate. I was ready to die. Why did you do this? And she was really angry about it. So it was similar. She was like, you know, I've been really sick and I just don't want to deal with it anymore. And I think sometimes people look at suicide, you know,
as the way out from the hurt and the pain and the whatever. Yes, they're going
and I
through.
Think other people who are not suicidal kind of think of it as, oh, they're just really depressed and it'll get better, blah, blah, blah. When sometimes you just, you know, tired of living. You know, you lived a long life, you're ready to go, and you're just like, hey, whatever. And this wasn't really suicide because it was a seizure or something, but she didn't want to be alive. So I think sometimes people don't consider that, because the EMT was like, well, I saw how your sister was so upset, so that's why I did it. But again, it's not about the person.
Did you see the sister?
She did. She said she saw it. Spoiler. So I guess I just don't like for people to have their choices taken from them because of how someone else feels about it. I think that's what my problem was, not the fact that she wasn't letting her kill herself specifically, because of course we want everyone to be alive. But at the end of the day, you know, it's your life.
Don't take my choices.
But, you know, that was the episode where they had the baby.
To Sophia's credit, because now that I'm thinking about it, the whole plot was Sophia, you know, sits with it and then says to the girls, I'm going to do it. I'm going to sit by her side. So to Sophia's credit, she tinkered with the idea of being there for her in the way she was asked to be. She gave it consideration, and she backed off when she realized, I think it's not, what was the lady's name? I just know her as filet mignon.
It wasn't Agnes.
That's what I was thinking it was, but maybe
it wasn't Agnes. I don't think, was it Agnes?
Let me look it up. Let me see.
It was the funeral for Lillian.
Did she say Lily? That would make sense.
I just know she was like, I'm gonna miss her soul. I don't know, but
let me see who
I'm not going to come for Sophia, because I certainly would not know what to do with
Martha. It was Martha.
I'll be honest, so.
Martha Lamont.
Martha. Who's Agnes?
Agnes Bradshaw.
I know there's an Agnes. I think that's the friend that died that made Sophia go to the nunnery, if that's what you call it, the convent. But I think also throwing the baby in there with that episode, was it interesting? Because she's giving this baby this whole speech or whatever about life, and they had the little sappy music that they don't typically have, unless it's really, really sad. But I feel like, again, it's kind of like, oh, don't kill yourself, because, you know, now we're going to have this baby, and we're going to tell the baby that life, you know, is so great and they should want to be alive too. And I think that was kind of like a cheesy way to really drive home the you know, live life thing. Because I feel like if I was someone that can identify with Martha and I watched that episode, again, I'd be like, oh, you know, easy for you to say. Now you want to shove this baby in my face on top of it. Mm-hmm. So I guess
it's
just
definitely public service announcement.
Yeah, very. I feel like on the original airing, they probably had the cast afterwards. If you or someone you know is struggling, you know, which is good to have. Mm-hmm. But I just don't always like the delivery of special episodes because I feel like they kind of ham it up or can be condescending. I'll give this one a pass, though, because as you said, you know, there was a lot of comedy to make up for it, like them dancing, I boom, then you boom, and we're all booming, one of my favorite scenes. Mm-hmm. So it definitely went back and forth. And an appearance by Harry Weston, so, you know, episode has everything you need and more. And then one of my favorite scenes, which is when Sophia gets put on the bar, and she's like, oh, it was better the first time, what do you think? When he takes her down. But yeah, I would probably say those are the top three saddest episodes. I'm sure there are others, and maybe we will do a part two of sad episodes and bring you back to make us cry some more. And,
okay, space them out, because shit.
And have us debate the live, what's the word I'm looking for? I'll probably have to go back and edit because my mind is devoid of all thoughts, much like those. But basically where we really get to see the girls as humans and not just, you know, delivering punchlines. I think it's when they have those sad moments. That's when we really, you know, feel for them as who they are as, you know, people in this fictional world. And it definitely makes me look at them differently in a good way. So at least the sad episodes are good for that much.
Yep, they are. And, you know, sometimes it's not even like the whole episode sad and there's just that split moment where it's just like Rose and the cake slice. I think that touched a lot of people.
The cake slice.
Yeah, when she cuts a slice of cake for Charlie and she says, I'm going to move to Miami.
Oh, you know the rules. I get the rose. People love that. I don't like that scene.
The only reason I love that scene is because Betty White's partner had passed before Golden Girls, and I just felt like that was for him.
Yeah, people always say that whenever she has a sad moment with Charlie, that she's really talking to Alan, which she might be. That's very possible. But I think for me, I think that's why I don't like it, is because it's sad. Like, I don't want to see Rose sad. It's bad enough to have a sad episode, but to have a whole scene with, you know, the most cheerful character being sad is kind of a downer. And then I don't like that she and Sophia have the same kitchen. Like, damn, y'all couldn't spring for a new set.
But it just lets you know that they're human. You know what I'm saying? It gives you something to resonate with. So I thought it was a nice sentiment.
I suppose. Yeah. I guess since it's a flashback, I know that things do get better for her. That's definitely up there as the most sad scene, probably.
Yeah,
just not the episode as a whole. I don't even remember. Oh, that was the birthday episode, which is even worse. An episode about birthdays and you want to have this sad ass scene where she's talking to her dead husband.
You just remember the love of your life, you know what I'm saying, how you used to do things. I thought it was a good moment to resonate with.
We go from Mr.
And the whole scene
that
isn't sad. It's like a flash moment at the end. It's just the I love you, Charlie.
Yeah.
And the, you know, it's just the and it's the same with the second episode with I said goodbye, Stanley. Those it can be like just a few words, and it's I don't know, those moments I feel like they resonate. Or for me, Dorothy saying goodbye to Stan. My parents have been divorced since I was 1 year old. And I watched my mom struggle every year of my life, financially, emotionally, physically. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how they can pack such a visceral experience that a lot of people could relate to in so few words. So sometimes the whole episode doesn't have to be sad for like that one line to just
The goodbye Stanley was definitely one of the more dramatic interactions they had, and it was the first time we even see him. And I think originally they didn't, I would assume, I have to read my my reference books, but I would assume that they didn't intend to bring him back the way they wrote him off. But then the chemistry was so good, they kind of reversed it. But, you know, her saying goodbye, Stanley, that's me saying goodbye to my season two DVD box set when I let
Mark, please bring back the season two DVD box set. Jesus
Christ.
You
know, whenever they're dealing with their husbands, those are also really sad moments, like whenever Sophia's talking to Sal or when Blanche was having that dream about George. Again, yeah, those are probably the saddest moments there too, even more so than when they talk about their parents, because Rose kind of dismisses the fact that her mother died. Like, oh, she's in the cemetery in St. Olaf, and, you know, Blanche talking about her mother, Sophia talking about her parents. Like, those, I guess when they remember the deaths, it's not seen as sad. When it happens live and in front of us, it's sad. And then with their husbands, I think that's a different kind of love. So that's why
they
are, you know, more depressed. Because you expect, you know, your parents to die or whatever before you. But with, you know, with your marriage, you don't know. It could be anybody. It's a toss-up. So at least in my case, he's going to be buried alive with me. So
buried alive. Jesus Christ. We'll Manny, I'll make sure you're safe. I'll make sure you're safe, man.
But yeah, I think those, so we've classified some sad episodes, and then we've classified some sad moments. So I will, I think we agree that them talking to their partners is probably the saddest shit outside of Sophia losing Phil.
Her son, because that's just a different type of her.
Just sad all around. So thank you, Ben, for bringing down the show with your
don't do that to my good friend Ben.
But we do appreciate
I'm so glad y'all brought me on. This was so fun. I don't have a little GG click, so it was nice to, you know, reminisce and stuff.
Well, you're welcome to come back again. We, you know, I like to think, as I tweeted last night while I was doing reefers with Mildred, that I really think that, you know, this is the show for the people, because so many people have thoughts and opinions that they want to share, but not everybody feels like doing a podcast. They might just want to say one little thing and then be done. So if you are a fan and you want to, you know, share your thoughts, send us a DM so that you can be on the show. I will say it's interesting that many people that expressed interest were not following us. And a lot of people who interact with me on our social medias, I don't think they realize that we have a podcast. Maybe they think I'm just posting funny stuff from the Golden Girls. But yes, there's a show. But I guess if you're listening to this, you already know that. So maybe there's no point in getting into that. But if you were...
Trigger warning.
You were saying that you are considering going to Golden Con. Hopefully you make it. We'd love to see you there. And, you know, you can rub elbows with the elite of the Golden Girls community as a you know, an expert yourself. But if not, maybe we'll catch you next year, because I intend to be there every year over and over again. I don't know if the people heading it agree or, you know, for that. But that's my personal
bring us back.
Declaration. Yes.
Put it on TV. Do it live. All right, go ahead.
I'm going to try. You know, I'm going to contact Windy City Live, because I was on there before, and I'm going to be like, hey, are y'all going to be doing anything about Golden Con? Because you could bring me back, period. Cool. So shout out to Windy City Live, Val Warner. Hit me up. But again, thank you, Benjamin. Makes me think of Blanche's Benjamin. Is that the one that was black? No, he wasn't black. He wasn't black. He was a Yankee.
Look, I'm just, please.
Well, you're black and a Yankee, so there you go.
There we go.
But thank you for joining, and would you like to tell everybody where they can find you? Look at you, so ready to say the outro, Kay. You just ready?
I'm waiting on Ben to give his closing remarks.
Yes, where can we find you?
If you want to follow me on Twitter, that's where you're going to get all my Golden Girls jargon. So it's PlayboyBenny1.
Playboy Benny.
Follow. But again, thank you both for having me on. This was so much fun. It was great. With
always
you.
A pleasure. Coming. Who needs sleep
next
anyway?
Next time we're going to do something fun, because we could do a little bit sad, but we got to end it on a happy note next time, because, geez, the mood.
Yep.
mood.
Yes, and Kay, I want you to be there when I kill myself.
please. The suicide prevention hotline number is 800-273-8255. Jesus Christ.
You did it right. But thank you for listening. And as always, as I always say,
thank you for being a friend. Thank you for being a friend. Thank you for being a friend.
Wow. One day, maybe a Golden Con, I'll get to say it. But thanks for listening, everyone, and tune in next time.
Have a golden day.
To all you image consultants, OK Petunias, and fancy men out there, don't forget to follow So Good We Named It on Instagram and Twitter at So Good We Named It. And check us out at the very first Golden Girls Convention, Golden Con, in Chicago, April 22nd through 24th. Go to thankyouforbeingafan.com for more information. And as always, thank you for being a friend.